Sam, now, I take it that you're a little fired up for Bedlam this weekend?
So I went to the Police Athletic League event last night at Bern, where they bring in some former OU and OSU players, and we get to kind of hang out and have some drinks and eat some great food and mingle with some, you know, fans and family, and everybody wants to come out and just kind of hang out with us and talk a little bit about the game and our memories of the game and talk a little trash. And there was some – Wes Sims got on the mic last night and said something that were pretty hurtful. There was a little bit of you know, everybody wants – all the OU guys want to talk about the past. There was one joke that was made the joke was, what do you call an OU player with a national championship ring? And everybody said, you know, national champions. And they were like, well, what do you call an OSU player with a national championship ring? And they were like, thieves. And I'm like, you know what? That's it. I'm trying to take off my nice shirt now because we have to fight here at Bern. That's where I'm at with this. Man, I'm fired up for this game. I think the thing that really sticks out to me the most this weekend would be the fact that we don't have too many more of these, right? You're looking at probably the next to last one of this Bedlam matchup that I take a lot of pride in saying that I played in. The Bedlam of the last 20 years, I think, has been some of the best rivalry action that you're going to get in college football. And I am proud to say that I played for an Oklahoma State team that was able to beat OU twice at a time that they were national championship contenders year in, year out. I love this game. I love the way it feels in Stillwater as a player, but I love it even more in Norman because typically you get a bunch of tea sippers in that stadium that don't have a whole lot to say. Around this time of the year, though, they got something to say around Bedlam time. I think they're a little beaten down there in Norman these days. I don't know how loud the atmosphere will be, but I'm fired up for what is always just a big-time college football experience.
What do you think, Marcus?
Well, I think that trying to figure out which fan base is more excited about the game tomorrow. I don't know that either one is super fired up.
I mean, I feel like there's some I feel like the football says that Oklahoma State should probably win this game. So I think the Cowboy faithful are probably a little more smiley today than the OU fans are. But as far as confidence is concerned, I mean, I said it yesterday on the radio. I don't say it again. As many times as I've come into this game believing that Oklahoma State has got the better team and they should win this game, I leave just mad as hell because they have found a way to lose the darn thing, right? And so anything is possible during this game, anything. And I think that's probably the thing that most people are scared about is to get too excited about it. OU fans don't want to look at the line and be like, oh, yeah, we think they're 7 points better. OSU fans don't want to look at the line and say and say anything because they're sitting there going, why are we supposed to lose? And now doubt is creeping in. So I think both fan bases are probably just a little more reserved this time of the year than normally.
Let me ask you guys, I mean, do you think that home field even makes a difference this year? Matt will say,
yes.
I don't want to misquote you, Matt. What did you say earlier that about home field in this?
Well, I just said that OU's lost in their home field twice this year. I think you would rather be at home. I don't know that OU is the snake pit, kind of like what Sam said. I don't know that it's Death Valley at night.
Correct.
I think you would rather be at home, but I don't know. OU's they've already dropped two at home this year, and I don't – I don't get the sense that this OU fan base is all this fired up for this game. I really don't.
Let me tell you something. So when we beat OU 2001 and 2002 in a row, if y'all would have grabbed me after we warmed up in 2003 and said, what's the score of this game going to be? I would have looked at you both in the face and said, 75-3. They're getting ready to murder us. Because the feel in that stadium, I have never felt – and now that I've covered OU, I've been to a ton of OU games. I was appalled a couple years ago when West Point almost beat their butts, and no one cheered, and no one was loud. I'm like, what are you doing? But this time, this one time in Norman, Oklahoma, when OSU won that game back-to-back years, I thought those people were going to come out of the stands. It was four quarters of the loudest, craziest, leaned in. Some dad held his kid over the railing to spit on me as I came out of the locker room. I mean, they were irate. So it can get there, right? It 100%. I have experienced what that looks like. But, man, it's hard to do, right? It's hard to get OU fans off of their butts and engage in a game like that. And to me, it's one of the oddest things because this team is a perennial powerhouse, one of the greatest programs in sports. And the fan base is just like, yeah, we're here to win. And if we're not going to win, we're not going to say anything about it. And it just, it's weird. It's very, very weird. But that one time in Norman in 2003, those people were trying to fight. It was crazy.
And what was the score that day, Sam?
52-9.
Oh, they beat the dog out of us. Yeah, they killed us. Well, did we score, Mark? We scored with a – did we score in a scoop and score? We didn't even score a traditional touchdown, I feel like. I feel like a defensive end scored that game.
I don't remember, but I do remember that game. I mean, that game was about as electric of a crowd as OU's had. There have been some in the past. There's some of those games in the 80s were clearly great crowds. The Texas Tech jump around game was a big, you know, a big good crowd. I remember the 03 game because I remember this. We're doing a show at Bob Moore Cadillac when it was in Norman. And I'm on the radio, and I pick OSU to cover the spread. Oh, Cowboys were getting about 18 that day. And I said, hey, look, OSU, they seem to have OU's number, even though that OU team was, you know, phenomenal. And so I'm doing the games for OU. Didn't pick OSU to win, just picked OSU to cover. And I see Mike Stoops running out of the tunnel kind of after everybody else has come down to the sidelines, and I'm kind of standing out there in the field. And I see him. He's got this look on his face, and he's running right at me. And he runs up and kind of with spit flying everywhere, that's how I remember it at least, says, how the hell you picked them to beat us? And I was like, I didn't. I didn't pick them to beat you. I just said I thought that it would be within 18. So I will say this, that tomorrow night it'll be cold. It'll be night game. There will be some adult beverages, I think, consumed on Campus Corner tomorrow, probably some of the heavier variety based on the temperatures and the desire to stay warm. And once the people in red see the people in orange, it will be a bedlam game. I promise you. No matter how fired up or not fired up that the fans are. So I do think that OU will have a home field advantage. They've lost more games on the road than they've been home this year. They've played more games at home. So I think that they, to me, that does make a difference. Oklahoma State has lost their last three on the road and play really poorly in the last two.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy, game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Yeah, and you know, like Matt says, that they have lost a few at home this year, but I guarantee those OU fans do remember what happened in Stillwater last year. So I don't know.
Any of them going to suit up on defense,
right?
Tomorrow?
What's that?
Any of them going to suit up on defense tomorrow?
No, I'm just saying the crowd. I'm not saying that the players are automatically going to be better players. I'm saying I think the crowd cares about who wins this game, and I do think the crowd is more of a factor in a bedlam game than it is just in the other
that's,
you know, random
games. That's interesting
games.
Because 11 months out of the year, I hear about how OSU is not OU's rival. Interesting.
Well, yeah, OSU, listen, OSU's running.
From me?
OSU's
Matt,
running.
What are you talking about? You don't hear that from me.
I'm hearing it from a ton of fans. I hear it all the time.
I'm the one that talks about how this has been. I agree with Sam. This has been a great rivalry over the last 20 years or so. I think it is one of the better rivalries in college football over the last 20 years.
No, I hear from fans.
You don't
all
hear
the
that
time.
From me.
OSU's not our rival. They're our little brother. And now I'm hearing that, oh, no, we're going to be fired up tomorrow. Okay, well.
Yeah. OSU's running game is not good. It's not. They've had one play of over 20 yards this year against Division I opponents from their running backs. That's awful. That's about as bad as there is in the country. They cannot run the ball, and in Spencer Sanders' condition, I don't think that he's going to be running up and down the field tomorrow. Now, he might, but their defense also has a problem stopping teams here recently, and they are very banged up, and they're thin in the defensive line. And so this is a matchup that favors OU, I think.
I agree with everything Mark just said. I mean, that's what I've been saying all week, yeah.
I agree with what you're saying to a degree, but we also watch Iowa State offensively look like they had a pulse against Oklahoma. And I would tell you that the biggest mismatch on this game, in my opinion, is on the sidelines. Give me the Oklahoma State staff 100% all day long against the OU staff and coming up with a game plan and making halftime adjustments. Those two things aren't the same. Gundy comes in as one of the most established head coaches in college football over the last 20 years, and that dude, it's like he takes a can of cream corn and some canned turkey, and he makes a hell of a Thanksgiving meal out of it every year with his offensive line. Gundy's going to find a way to run the ball against that OU defensive front, who has been inept, physically incapable of seeing people from doing so, and it starts in the middle. And now you're telling me that Redmond's not going to be available in this game? What are they going to do to stop them from running between the tackles? Nothing. They're not going to do anything to stop that from happening. If OSU's offensive line gets up to the second level in any capacity unscathed, which they will, OSU will absolutely run the ball for 100 yards, 150 yards with the quarterback and the running back situation. They're going to run the ball against Oklahoma.
Okay, are you saying the tailback's going to run it for 150 or
no? I'm saying that just total, they're going to get close to 200 between the tailback and the quarterbacks.
Okay,
the only problem is that would be the first time it's happened all year to run the ball that well with the tailbacks. I don't know about Gundy, man. I mean, I think a lot of people would tell you that. I guess it could be different that Brent's on the sidelines and Mike is way more proven than Brent, but I've seen Mike Gundy do some really, really strange things.
I know it. It just makes
last
you
couple
go
of
crazy.
Years, I mean, in 2020, he punted the ball on the 36-yard line to OU, yep. Tries to go in at half one year. I mean, I don't know if that was in his head at that point and it's now out, but heck, last year going into this game, I thought OSU was gonna beat OU pretty easily, and that didn't happen.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know where I put a whole lot of these advantages, disadvantages. And I'm telling you, while I think OU's going to win the game, I wouldn't be surprised at really any result in
this
contest.
Wait a minute. You picked OU to win the game?
I picked them to win and cover, yes.
Man, hang up on Mark. Win and cover. What are we talking about? No, I think that, you know, this is the one time of the year I get to come in and have some fun and cheer on my team. But, you know, the line is the line for a reason. And Vegas, it seems, yeah. I mean, they seem to be undefeated. So I'm kind of with you in the anything can happen in this game. And Gundy has been sporadic at best. And I really feel like the damage was done. Like, there's like watching Bob Stoops stare down Mike Gundy at the 50-yard line at a Bedlam game. Like, that stuff, it was like some real mental warfare. And so when Bob retired, the first thing I thought that summer was, holy crap, Gundy, here we go. Gundy's got Bedlam coming back. Right, he's going to be able to handle this young guy and Lincoln Riley, who's now the head coach, and then Riley just put foot to ass immediately. I mean, it's insane. So, like, here we go. Gundy's a little bit different than he was in 2009. He's a little bit different than he was in 2015. And so it's time for him to take control of the game and the perfect timing, right? With two left. With one more of these after this one, maybe he'll take the reins and be the elder statesman and control it a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a huge Mike Gundy fan, Sam, but for most OSU fans I talk to, they do not like the way he has approached the Oklahoma game over the years. They think he's been way too conservative in this series. Not a tremendous weekend college football-wise. With a lot of big ranked matchups and a couple that we have lost some luster with UCLA losing last week to Arizona, with Oregon going down last week to Washington. But still good matchups, USC at UCLA, that game 7 o'clock on Big Fox on Saturday night, and Utah at Oregon. That is a 9:30 game on ESPN on Saturday night. Marcus, what are your thoughts on the two Pac-12 games?
Well, I think that USC should be able to outscore UCLA. And if the game is close, I would take Caleb Williams over DTR to make the play that decides it. Travis Dye being out hurts the USC offense. I think he's a really good running back that transferred from Oregon last year. Todd said something yesterday about Bo Nix not playing for Oregon. If that's the case, I think that leans to Utah.
Well, that line has moved from Oregon being a 3-point favorite to being a 2.5-point dog just in the last 24 hours or so, Marcus. And so I think a lot of that has to have to do with Bo Nix, right?
Right, with the speculation for sure.
Yeah. So
I'll Furman say
mentioned
I'll say
that yesterday, Marcus. Did he say anything about that?
About which?
A Bo Nix on the.
Yeah, Todd said that he's hearing that might not play.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sam. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I think that the USC-UCLA game is pretty interesting. Like Mark said, you take Dye out of it, who's a very talented back. the one thing that Caleb Williams does not like, right? Like, this kid's a real emotional guy, and he struggles at times controlling his emotions throughout the course of a game. What he hates, though, is sitting on the sidelines. Like, he hates it. And so let's say that UCLA starts off fast and they're able to really, because, you know, they play bully ball at UCLA. Their offensive line is really good. Their defensive line is really good. DTR has learned how to play within himself, which is why I think he's having the year that he's having. He's not out there reaching too far or doing too much. He's running the offense the way that it's designed, and it's working for them. They really have the capability to stay on the football field for a very, very long time. And if they can have some extended drives early in this game and let Caleb Williams go three and out a couple of times, or maybe have some short drives, and let, you know, you get up by 10 and Williams starts to get antsy and there's no Travis Dye back there to reestablish the line of scrimmage, reestablish a run game that allows you to kind of plan the rest of the attack off of, all of a sudden USC's looking like they're flailing a little bit if their quarterback's not out there having success. So Caleb Williams is going to have to do more to win this game, and sometimes asking him to do more than what he already does puts him in a position that, you know, he could be a little out there, right? Turnover here, maybe a fumble there, whatever, just trying to do too much. So I don't know. I think this game is interesting. I would like, at the end of the day, though, all I really want out of UCLA is a Kansas State-UCLA matchup in a bowl game, because that, to me, sounds like one hell of a good time. Two real physical, tough guy teams.
Well, that's a pretty good analysis, I think, on the way to beat USC.
Yeah.
Well, and DTR, what was his quote? I mean, he said something about the 62 points they hung on them last year, like they're going to do that again or whatever. And and they can run it. They're physical, like Sam says. Charbonnet, yeah. DTR. I just can't believe they lost to Arizona last week. I'm a little disappointed, because this would have been a great, you know, top 10 matchup. It would have been the first top 10 matchup with USC and UCLA since Troy Aikman and Rodney Peete back in 1988. But it's still a great matchup, and a lot of talk about the over-under, guys. Last 3 years, the totals, Marcus, 65, 65 and a half, and the real totals were 87, 81, and 95. What is the over-under on this one this week?
They're not going to give it to you in the 60s. I will correct you. It is a top-10 uniform matchup every year when both teams wear their home jerseys.
Yeah, that is true.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is true. No, hey, listen, I'm tuned in. So that one's 7 o'clock game on Fox. And then what do you guys think about Utah-Oregon? Now, again, if Oregon doesn't have Bo Nix, well, then – Utah's the obvious choice, and that's why the Lions moving in their favor. Oregon coming off the loss to Washington. Marcus, what do you think?
Like Utah, I think it's a physical team that can run the ball, so I like their side of it.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree that also. But let me tell you something. Oregon, from a roster standpoint, top to bottom, let's talk about, like, the 30 kids that really add to what Oregon's doing on any given Saturday. That's a good football team. Right, that's a good, tough, physical football team. I think we get caught up in that Oregon flair too often. I think we, you know, the jerseys and the passing game and all the things, that it's harder for us to evaluate them as a tough guy team also. But, I mean, I feel like between Oregon and UCLA, they got a couple of dudes that absolutely want to get in a fist fight on any given Saturday. So, without Bo Nix, is Utah going to win the game? Probably. But don't get it. Oregon's going to fight. It'll be a better game than I think people anticipate. They'll find themselves in position to make it interesting. At least Utah's gonna have to go beat that team. There's too many good players in Oregon's team at this point for them to go quietly, right? They're gonna put up a fight.
In the Big Ten a couple of weeks ago, Illinois is sitting there at 7-1 and looked at as a possible threat to Michigan. Well, now Illinois drops two straight games against Michigan State and Purdue, and Michigan comes into this game, I'm showing 17.5 point favorite. What do you think, Marcus? Any chance of an upset there, Illinois?
I don't think so. I mean, there's always a chance for an upset this time of the year if you turn the ball over a couple of times and the pressure builds on you being undefeated, and in a week where you've got the Ohio State game coming up next, you get out there and you get careless against this Illinois defense, which is really hard-hitting and capable of getting turnovers, then yeah. Michigan's been pretty good, I think, against the number this year. Like, even in the first half a couple weeks ago, they were trailing Rutgers, but still extended in the second half to cover. But it's a good Illinois defense.
And Sam, they got Chase Brown. Illinois does leads all the FBS backs with 1,342 yards. But like Mark said, Michigan, number one defense against the rush. They only give up about 72 or 3 yards a game rushing. So I don't know. I really like Michigan a lot to win the game. I don't know about the spread. I mean, that's a lot of points to give. But what do you think, Sam?
I mean, for let me say this. You know, obviously I'm an Ohioan, so I want Michigan to lose every stinking game they play. That's something that I was born into. There's no doubt about that. But I'm curious about Michigan and their ability to finish the race, right? Like if you think of a sprinter, somebody that's like a real fast sprinter, 100-meter dash guy, they're at that last 20, you can physically see them hit that last gear, right? Like they look fast through the whole race, there's no doubt, but there's a point in every 100-meter dash where you see those bodies, they just hit this point of like homeostasis that this is as fast as I can be. I don't know that Michigan has got that last 20, like as far as being a high-end team. I think they're very, very good. But I'm not looking at this Michigan team and thinking, yeah, that's a national championship winning football team. I think they are a top 10 football team. There's no doubt about it. But in a situation where, you know, they got to go out and beat up on a team like Illinois, right, root them out, I don't know that this point in the season, are they focused on that? Are they looking at Illinois as a threat? Because they should be. Because I don't think that they're good enough to just blow them out or to dismiss them. But with all the hype surrounding the program, right, Michigan gets hyped up quick. People love it to see the Wolverines when they're good. I wonder how focused they are coming into this. Because if they're not focused in coming into it, you know, Illinois is like, bet, we'll absolutely get in a fist fight with you. Another team that wants to drag it through the mud, make it a fast game, make it an intense physical matchup, stay in the field as long as they can, you know, drag this thing out to the fourth quarter would put some doubt in Michigan's mind and find out if they can finish the race. And so I think this is an interesting game. Michigan's going to win it. But I'm excited to see if they get a real test here. Let's test their mettle a little bit and see if they're up for what comes next, right? A national championship opportunity.
All right, I got to ask about one more game, and that's, of course, TCU and Baylor, Marcus. And TCU won me over by what they did last week on the defensive side. We'd seen them have good halves defensively and so forth, but Texas without an offensive touchdown, 28 yards rushing, 3.3 yards per offensive play. That's what they did to Texas. I just can't see Baylor flipping the switch in this one, Mark, from what they did last week to winning at home against TCU. What do you think?
I like Baylor in the game. I think TCU played a really good game last week. I just think every week they've got to put this undefeated record on the line, and yet they still have been very vulnerable this year at times. They are a team that does – make clutch plays and finds ways to win, but I think that's kind of a dangerous way to operate. And the Big 12 has been balanced this year. TCU spoiled Baylor's season a year ago. It kept them out of the discussion of the college football playoffs. So I just kind of think this is a huge rivalry. These two schools don't like each other very much. And I think that's going to be a tough environment for TCU.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
Well, the Bear, Chris Felica, and Scott Van Pelt agree with you. Sam, what do you think about that game?
I have been waiting for TCU to stumble all season long. I've been nitpicking and trying to find a way where they're not as good as they look. And I just, you know, I'm giving up on that. I think they're going to close this thing out. Worst case scenario, I think they close this thing out. I think they beat Baylor, and then they're going to meet Kansas State in the Big 12 championship and lose. And every one of us is just going to go flip tables at that point as far as the conference is concerned. But, yeah, I think they find a way. I think they're just too good at the quarterback position. The decision-making is great. That receiving core has been incredible this year with the versatility that they display. They got a first-rounder out there catching balls from 6'4". He's a matchup problem for everybody they're going to play this year. That interior of the offensive line has been great. NFL players in that offensive line, the running game has been established. The biggest question for TCU is, like, where are you truly defensively, right? And I feel like there's been enough craziness that's happened on the offenses in the Big 12 this year that we don't necessarily know how good their defense is. But the Aiken kid, Mark, nailed this last a couple weeks ago when we were covering the Baylor game. That boy will throw the ball up in the air and not have a damn idea where it's going. I mean, literally. He's just rolling out there. He's like, there's my guy. The play's broken down. Let me just go ahead and see if I fit in the window the size of a saltine. Like, he really trusts his ability way too much. TCU's seen a lot of football this year. Their defense has come in clutch in moments. That kid's going to turn over that ball, and TCU's got the ability to sit on it when they need to. So give me the Horned Frogs.
Nice win by the Titans. I'll say this, it is very nice when you have like a third and one or two just to be able to toss the ball to a fully grown man named Derrick Henry who has matchup issues all over the field. He's just going to run over people, and it's pretty simple. I don't know what the Titans, they just are nondescript everywhere else. A quarterback, very average. Defense is very average. Offensive line can be good at times. Derrick Henry is phenomenal. He's one of the best players in the NFL, but I don't expect them to go very far in the playoffs, especially where in the AFC, where I think the wild cards are going to be pretty strong.
Sam, what did you think last night?
Yeah, I think I got more of a I think your assessment of Tennessee is 100% accurate, right? Like, it just doesn't just necessarily jump off the page. What I will say, though, I'm sitting there watching that game thinking to myself, the basement in the NFL really across the board is relatively shallow this year, right? There's not a whole lot of teams that don't have at least something. Right, something that gives them an advantage when they take the field on any given Sunday or Thursday or Monday, whatever day we're talking about. And so, as good as Derrick Henry's just such an X-factor player, once that dude starts running downhill, it's like he sucks the life out of the opposing team. He's phenomenal to watch get it done. Tannehill is extremely average, there's no doubt about that, but he won't necessarily go out and lose it for you either, which is kind of what you're looking for in those situations. Like, Ryan's not throwing the ball in the window that he's questioning his ability to get it there. He's just making the right decision, right? The more passive decision, because he knows he's got a run game that is elite. So I think Tennessee is, they're decent enough. They're not going to surprise anybody late in the postseason or anything like that. But, yeah, I think the NFL is about as healthy as it's been in the last 20 years. It's just a bunch of very talented players, good football teams across the board. I think we're getting great matchups each week. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
And normally I'm right in line with you guys on Tennessee and Tannehill, but Tannehill did impress me last night. I have to admit, for much of the night, Green Bay was doing a pretty good job on Derrick Henry, and Tannehill steps up and throws for 333 and a couple of touchdowns, and he did have the one interception where he never even saw the cornerback on that one. But they did they impressed me last night. Okay, so for this weekend, obviously the game of the weekend is Matt's Cowboys against the Vikings. Matt is trying to put the hex on the Vikings by picking the Vikings. But, Matt, your picks have been pretty good, so be careful. I mean, because
This is classic Matt Meyer. I mean, he got it wrong earlier this year when the Cowboys went to face the Rams. And I will tell you that this is a massive recency bias game here. The Cowboys played well for three quarters and then choked and gave it up in the fourth quarter against Green Bay. I think that was kind of an odd result. The Vikings went in against a banged-up Allen and got a miraculous win in Buffalo. And by the virtue of everybody remembering what they only saw last week, you look at this game and you go, yep, it's the Vikings at home. The line gives this game away. Cowboys are going to win it.
Sam, what do you think?
I 100% agree with Mark. I think that Dallas is just going to find a way to get it done. You know, like that defense has been fantastic. They continue to get better throughout the season. There's better, more communication than there was earlier in the year when they were still good. I think they just keep improving each and every week. You know, you almost wonder, like, the quarterback situation is intriguing to me. Prescott, to me, seems like he's just thrown out an anchor with that offense. It wasn't dynamic by any means with Cooper Rush at the helm, but it was effective and efficient. And I feel like the efficiency rating drops with Prescott back there trying to do too darn much. Somebody needs to tell that boy, look, we get it. You've had some great seasons, and you just made a bunch of money, and you're a leader and all the things, but what we need you to do is run the damn offense. Just run the offense, right? Take what they're giving you and move the chains when you can with your feet and just be normal, be average right now, because there's plenty of games for you to ramp it up to finish strong, but right now we need to just run the offense. And if he can go in there and do that, Dallas gets it done.
Amen, amen, amen. Matt Meyer just flexed on me, man. I mean, right as I was saying that, he tweeted out this story, this manifesto that he's written and posted on the sportsanimal.com. So I think that he's probably got a lot to say.
I think Minnesota.
What does the story say, Matt? Give us the gist of the story, or do you have to?
Well, I recap the Packers game and give a little bit of look ahead to Minnesota. I picked the Vikings by 7. I agree with what Mark's saying. I think there's logic there. I've said it all week long. I do think it's a good spot for Dallas. You've got Dallas coming off a difficult loss. Sometimes those things have a way of getting you refocused, particularly if you're coached well. I know there's debate on that. On the other hand, for Minnesota, you're coming off an emotional high. You just beat a team that arguably has been the best team in football this year. I still go Philadelphia there, but one of, anyway, in Buffalo. And you come back to do it. So I think from an emotional standpoint, I do think it's a good spot for the Cowboys. I will say that. I just think I think others are starting to see the cracks in Dallas defense that have kind of been there. I mean, Dallas cannot stop the run. What do you think Dalvin Cook's going to do to him? And then if the Cowboys walk another man down low in the box, you want to leave Justin Jefferson one-on-one? I don't know. I just think Minnesota has a little bit too much firepower. I think I said Minnesota makes one or two more big plays than Dallas can handle, and I've got the Vikings winning by a touchdown. But I do see where Mark's coming from with the point spread. I was surprised that Dallas was favored as well.
Well, none of us have even all mentioned, right, Kirk Cousins yet, who can be a master of disaster.
Well, I was leaving that to Craig. I mean, Craig's favorite quarterback. You know.
Send Craig out for the weekend on a high note.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.